Good morning. It is wonderful to be with you all. So glad to see that you're all here. As Corey already mentioned, if you're visiting with us, we're very glad that you're here as well. Hope that you'll stick around, give us a chance to get to know you, get to meet you a little bit more. I did have an introduction per normal written for this sermon, but given the events that happened yesterday, I kind of changed it a little bit, so I'm improvising a little bit here. But it just goes to show how frustrating things can be in this world. It's very discouraging, and if you've come in here carrying that baggage of that frustration or fear or anxiety, Jesus knows and He understands and He cares. And so we're going to be talking about Him this morning. We're going to be reflecting on Him because ultimately our hope does not hinge on the things that happen in this country. They are hinged in Him being the King, and the King who will ultimately bring us. So you want to turn over to Mark chapter 4 and 5. We're going to be discussing four stories from Jesus' life that demonstrate not only His power, but also His compassion, His care for every person that He interacts with. So you want to turn over to Mark chapter 4. I'm going to start reading down in verse 35. It reads, "On that day, when evening had come, He said to them, 'Let us go across to the other side.' And leaving the crowd, they took Him with them in the boat, just as He was. And there were other boats with Him. And a great windstorm arose, and the waves were breaking into the boat, so that the boat was already filled. But He was in the stern, asleep on the cushion. And they woke Him and said to Him, 'Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?' And He awoke and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, 'Peace, be still.' And the wind ceased, and there was a great calm. And He said to them, 'Why are you so afraid? Have you still no faith?' And they were filled with great fear and said to one another, 'Who then is this, that even the wind and the sea obey?'" So in our text, Jesus has been going out, He's been teaching in parables. And then He tells the disciples, we're heading on a different mission. We're going across the Sea of Galilee, and we're going to, they're going to be talking to Gentiles. And so He tells us right from the get-go, let us go across to the other side. Now, from what the disciples should already have known about Jesus, there is something different about when Jesus speaks. For us, we have to add, like, some sort of caveat on it. I really hope that I'm going to do this, but, you know, at the end of the day, it's hopeful. But when Jesus says something, it's going to happen. And so, when Jesus speaks these words, He's hoping they entrust that to Him. Now, as they go out on the Sea of Galilee, this windstorm picks up, and it clearly has to be a very terrifying windstorm. I am not very used to being on the water at all, so I'm sure if any storm happens while I'm on a boat, I will get sick. I will be afraid. But for a lot of Jesus' disciples, they grew up on this lake. They grew up here. And so for them to be terrified, it shows just how scary, how dangerous this storm was. And so their reaction as the boat is breaking and the water is getting in, they run to Jesus and they ask Him a very pertinent question. "Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?" Now we can look down on the disciples and be like, well, of course Jesus cares. But at least they went to Him first. Sometimes our reaction isn't to go to Him at all. Just be upset and angry and complain about our situation. But they run to Him and ask Him this question that is very important because the answer is yes. And so when Jesus wakes up from his sleep, He rebukes the wind, tells it to be quiet, and Mark notes here that it ceases and there is a great calm. If any of us goes and yells at a storm and tells it to stop, nothing's going to happen. It demonstrates that something different is known about Jesus. And then His response to disciples is a rebuke as well. We can take that, seems a little wrong. It seems a little odd for Jesus to speak to him this way. "Why are you so afraid? Have you still no faith?" But let's put it into context a little bit. disciples had already seen Jesus do things that are impossible. Lay hands on people, and they just heal. He's healed an entire village. They have been witnesses of his signs and his wonders. Is making it through a windstorm too great for him? But they also questioned something. They didn't say, Jesus, do you have the power to do that? But they said, do you care? And so it's very important for us that faith is not just, I believe God has the power, but I also know that he cares enough to help me in these situations. And we're going to see how that keeps working throughout these couple of chapters. And so the response that they give is a very important one. Because Mark, in his gospel, only twice does he say Jesus is God explicitly, at the beginning and at the end. But the rest of Mark's gospel is basically posing the question to you as the reader, who could possibly do this? And so the answer is only God. So Jesus is him. Jesus is the king. Now as we continue in our story, they make it to the other side, and they're going to have an encounter with a very unique situation. So you want to keep reading with me down in chapter 5, starting in verse 1. They came to the other side of the sea, to the country of the Gerasenes. And when Jesus had stepped out of the boat, immediately there met him out of the tombs a man with an unclean spirit. He lived among the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain. For he had often been bound with shackles and chains, but he wrenched the chains apart and broke the shackles in pieces. No one had the strength to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs and on the mountains, he was always crying out and cutting himself with stones. And when he saw Jesus from afar, he ran and fell down before him. And crying out with a loud voice, he said to him, what have you to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I adjure you by God, do not torment me. For he was saying to him, come out of the man, you unclean spirit. And Jesus asked him, what is your name? And he replied, my name is Legion, for we are many. And he begged him earnestly not to send them out of the country. Now a great herd of pigs was feeding there on the hillside. And they begged him, saying, send us into the pigs, let us enter them. So he gave them permission. And the unclean spirits came out and entered the pigs, and the herd, numbering about 2,000, rushed down the steep bank into the sea and drowned in the sea. The herdsmen fled and told it in the city and in the country, and people came to see what it was that had happened. And they came to see Jesus, or they came to Jesus and saw the demon-possessed man, the one who had the legion, sitting there, clothed and in his right mind. They were afraid. And those who had seen it described to him what had happened to the demon-possessed man and to the pigs. And they began to beg Jesus to depart from their region. As he was getting into the boat, the man who had been possessed with demons begged him that he might be with him. And he did not permit him, but said to him, go home to your friends and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy. And he went away and began to proclaim in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him. And everyone marveled. So in our story, Jesus gets out and now he is in Gentile territory. This is a place where they are pretty unfamiliar. And as soon as he steps out the boat, they encounter a terrifying situation. And that is a demon-possessed man who is running at them. The demon in the story, or the legion of demons in the story, just show how awful demons are, what their purposes and intentions are. For thousands of years, people have worshipped demons, and I find it very confusing, because this, at the end of the day, is what demons want to do. They want to live in people and destroy them. They do not care about you or your well-being, just drag you out, separate you from your culture, and then mar your identity, do awful things to you. So this demon, however, when Jesus steps out of the boat, it acknowledges its time is over. And so the best thing I could do was try to negotiate my way out of this situation. I don't want to be cast out. Let me throw myself down and hopefully I get a better deal. So Jesus' response, as he's speaking to the legion, tells it to come out, but then he decides to ask for the name. Now, a lot of people take the perspective that Jesus is talking to the demon and asking for his name. I take the perspective that Jesus is asking the man for his name. And instead, the demon responds. And that's very commonly how sin acts in our lives. As a matter of fact, that is what sin does. It comes in and it takes over. And it tells you, this is the way that you are going to live now. I'm going to control everything that you say and everything that you think. You think it's freedom, but it's really slavery. It takes away your joy and your identity and the beauty of living. And so, as Jesus is speaking to the man, instead he's responded to by the demon. Now the demon, of course, it asks, you know, can I go to the pigs? Send us to the pigs. We want to go there. And so Jesus allows that. And again, the text doesn't indicate for us why Jesus allowed it. But it does demonstrate the difference in between what Jesus does versus what the demons do. What is the intention of the devil and those who serve him? Jesus comes to bring new life. That he cares for this man and his situation. The demons do not. And so everything that they touch, be it a man or a pig, it's going to destroy. There could not be a further difference between how these people interact with the living things around them. And so after this happens, the pig farmers, naturally, they've lost their income. They're freaking out. They go back and tell everybody what's happened. And they bring them there. And they come back and see a man who had been demon-possessed, cutting himself and screaming and breaking out of chains. And now he's got new clothes on. He's in his right mind. Something had radically changed about who this man was. And so they don't like this, though. They're freaked out about it. And so they tell Jesus, you need to go. And so Jesus is going to go. He's going to leave. And the demon-possessed man wants to go with him. He wants to be a disciple. But Jesus tells him instead, no. That's confusing. Jesus has been asking people to follow him all over. Why is this guy? No. He tells him, you have a very important responsibility, a task. And that is, you go and tell people how God has had mercy on you. Again, as far as you understand, this is a Gentile. So he doesn't know the Old Testament. He doesn't know anything about, you know, the God of Scripture. What he does know is the very simple fact of, at one time I was demon-possessed, this man spoke to me and he freed me, and now I can go tell other people. The picture of the man who was possessed with demons is very similar to our own story. That we come in and we choose to be with sin. We choose to act upon the things that are gross and most base about our instinct. And then Jesus comes and says, this is going to hurt, but I will free you from it. And so once that is done, he reclothes us, puts us in our right mind, and then tells us, we have now the responsibility to tell people not to come to us to fix you. Bring them to Jesus. He can do the same thing for them. That is our duty. That is our responsibility. And that is the beauty of the gospel message. No one is too far. Come to Jesus. He can save. So he gets in the boat. He's going to go head back to closer to their normal country, the place that they're in. And we're going to have these two interconnected stories, some of my favorites in the Bible. And we're going to see how Jesus interacts in these two different stories here. So you want to keep reading with me down in verse 21 of Mark chapter 5. And when Jesus crossed again in the boat to the other side, a great crowd gathered about him, and he was beside the sea. And then came one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name, and seeing him, he fell at his feet and implored him earnestly, saying, my little daughter is at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her so she may be made well and live. And he went with them. And a great crowd followed him and thronged about him. And there was a woman who had a discharge of blood for 12 years and who had suffered much under many physicians and had spent all that she had and was no better, but rather grew worse. She had heard the reports about Jesus and came up behind him in the crowd and touched his garment. For she said, if I touch even his garments, I will be made well. And immediately the flow of blood dried up and she felt in her body that she was healed of her disease. And Jesus, perceiving in himself that power had gone out from him, immediately turned about in the crowd and said, who touched my garments? And his disciples said to him, you see the crowd pressing around you and you say, who touched me? And he looked around to see who had done it. But the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came in fear and trembling and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. He said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease." So when Jesus makes it to the shore, there's a bunch of people here because, I mean, the crowds he was teaching earlier, I don't think they dissipated. And so he's there, and then he has a surprising person run through the crowd to get his attention, and that is Jairus. Jesus has many enemies, but particularly in his time, the Pharisees did not like him. A leader of a synagogue certainly would not like him. But in this case, Jairus has heard and probably seen things and is determined. Nobody else can help. No doctor can help. My daughter needs help. And in his desperation, he goes to the one place where he can find it. He throws himself on his knees, saying, "You have the power and the authority. I'm submitting myself to you." It's a really big deal. And he pleads for Jesus to go and help him lay hands on his daughter. And Jesus goes and follows. But then our story is kind of interrupted by another one. Because in this crowd of a lot of people who are bouncing off of Jesus, there are two who understand how desperately they need him. Number one, Jairus, who's already here, but also this woman in the crowd. So everyone else is just kind of, you know, it's almost like a concert environment, just kind of bouncing off them. But this woman has intention. Mark gives us a little bit of information about her. We don't know exactly what her disease is, but we know that she's been suffering for 12 years. The internal bleeding or hemorrhaging likely had to do with menstruation or something like that. And so you can imagine, take yourself back 2,000 years in a culture that already does not think of women as equally human. And now you add in the fact that she has this incredibly bad disease. We also see that she is now impoverished because she has spent every cent trying to be healed. And the doctors haven't helped at all. They've made it worse. So you've got no money, and you are covered in shame to everyone else around you. And this time, she's living under the old covenant. She'd be unclean. Anything she touches, anyone she touches, becomes unclean. This is a situation of utmost desperation. She has nowhere left. And so as Jesus is walking through the crowd, she hasn't seen it. It just says she's heard reports of this person. And her faith is incredible. He never needs to acknowledge me. He doesn't need to touch me. If I just touch his garment, I'll be healed. God give me that type of faith, right? And so as she goes and she touches, she feels immediately everything is healed. Everything. 12 years of suffering are over. But naturally, that's a scary position to be in. And so she runs back through the crowd, and Jesus stops after he feels that this has happened. Everyone else thinks he's kind of insane for, I mean, everybody's touching you. We're all being touched here in this crowd. But Jesus, when he calls her back, it's not to shame her, rather to encourage her that her faith has made her well. That she has gone off and she's, you know, she's afraid, she's trembling. He gives her peace on top of the power that he gave her. And so this story is one of supreme comfort. That when he calls her back, it is not just to tell her how bad what she did was, but to encourage her in her faith. But then the other side of the story comes in. So let's keep reading. In verse 35. While he was still speaking, there came from the ruler's house some who said, "Your daughter is dead. Why trouble the teacher any further?" But overhearing what they said, Jesus said to be the ruler of the synagogue, or Jesus said to the ruler of the synagogue, "Do not fear, only believe." And he allowed no one to follow him except Peter and James and John, the brother of James. And they came to the house of the ruler of the synagogue, and Jesus saw a commotion, people weeping and wailing loudly. And when he entered, he said to them, "Why are you making a commotion and weeping? The child is not dead, but sleeping." And they laughed at him. But he put them all outside and took the child's father and mother and those who were with him and went in where the child was. Taking her by the hand, he said to her, "Talitha kumai," which means, "Little girl, I say to you, arise." And immediately, The girl got up and began walking, for she was 12 years of age. And they were immediately overcome with amazement. And he strictly charged them that no one should know this and told them to give her something to eat. So the other side of the story, as beautiful as Jesus' interaction with this woman is, putting myself in Jairus' situation, that would be extremely difficult. I'm not a father yet, but I'm already a very protective person. And so when daughter's in trouble, and you find the one person who can help, and you're taking them, you're on the way, you're like, just a few more minutes. And then this crowd is around you, and then Jesus randomly stops and starts looking around saying, who touched me? And it's like, what are you talking about? My daughter is this way. And then it gets worse, because after all this time, the woman finally comes and he's having this conversation with her. It's like, Jesus, my daughter. And then you get the worst news. Don't even bother him because your daughter is dead. That would be so heartbreaking. And in that case, you aren't necessarily thinking about, does Jesus have the power to help me? You're thinking about, does Jesus care about my daughter? Does he care about me? And Jesus' response to a person, Jairus, who's likely extremely heartbroken right now, angry and bitter, do not fear, only believe. And so Jairus probably, I don't think his anger just vanished, but he had enough faith to allow Jesus to come. And so Jesus takes James, John, or Peter, James, and John. They go to the house. And Jesus' interaction with the people who are moaning and weeping, I think, is really interesting. In this time period, and I'm sure in our time period, I didn't check, but I'm sure you could pay people to mourn and weep for you. This was very common in their time period. It shows how much humans struggle with death and how we handle suffering. But these people were paid to be here. And so Jesus, when he comes through, he tells them, actually, she's sleeping. He's being very serious. And he genuinely cares about this family. On the other hand, the people outside, they don't care. They're there for a paycheck. And it's revealed in the fact that they laugh. The contrast is so evident between Jesus who cares and those who don't. He gets everybody else out of the house. And then he raises this little girl from the dead. As Mark reveals, she's 12 years old. You can just hear the tenderness in Jesus as he goes over and raises her. And certainly, he doesn't even just leave her resurrected. That's important, but also, get her some food. She needs something to eat. For 12 years, these women, this young girl and the woman in the story older, they've been headed on a crash course. Both of them are in situations that are hopeless. And then they both run into Jesus on the same day. And they're both given new life. And I think that's just powerful. It's wonderful. But yet again, emphasized in the story, we see that Jesus cares not just to resurrect this woman, but also to give her something to eat. One of the deep struggles that we have with power is that people, when they go out and chase power, that's all they want. And they're going to destroy other people who get in their way. And Jesus, we encounter someone radically different who has all power. Power we can't even fathom. But also has all compassion. And so just in the stories we covered, four stories this morning, we saw that Jesus is able to stop storms with his voice. He's able to cast out demons. As a matter of fact, they're terrified. We see that he's able to heal diseases that couldn't be healed by others for 12 years. And even raise people from the dead. But also in these stories, we see his compassion he shows to every person he interacts with. To his disciples, he knows they needed more faith. They needed to grow. They needed to trust him. So he encourages them to do that. The man who had a demon, he now clothes him. Both in right mind, but also clothes on his body. The woman who was running away, she'd been healed, but she hadn't been really given peace. He gives that to her. And to a young girl who he's raised up, he asks for something to eat for her. We live in a reality of brokenness and suffering. That for all of us, we're going to go through situations where we are battling the sin or just losing the sin. Where things just do not go our way, people get hurt along the way, and that is just the difficult reality of this world. The comforting thing is Jesus already came down into this mess.
Amen.
And he demonstrated how much he cares for all of us. And so what he asks us to do is to go and tell the world about how he has had mercy. There is coming a day, whether in this life or the next, that the storm that's going on in your life, Jesus is going to break it.
Right.
That sin will be no more. It will be cut off. It will be destroyed. And there is hope of resurrection. And so if you are looking for that hope this morning, which I hope you are, pursue Jesus. We're all trying to run there with you. And so if there's a way for us to help you to grow closer to Jesus or to begin your relationship with Him, there's a way we can serve you. I'd like you to think about that as we stand next to you.